Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Peter Welch, let me ask you. I know that you've been trying to get dairy farmers signed up for the Dairy Safety Net program in the Farm Bill. What is that program, and are you finding resistance?
Well, no. Farmers have to decide by this Friday whether they want to participate in what's called the margin insurance program. And that will be of enormous help to our farmers if the roller coaster effect of prices, you know, the price of milk goes down, the price of grain goes up, that will be really essential to them being able to stay in and keep farming. And it's only $100 for them to get catastrophic coverage. And then the individual farmers can look at their production rates and then buy insurance that has some taxpayer help to it, so it's affordable, that suits their own needs. And the deadline for signing up is Friday. And what we're trying to do is let people know this is a new program. It replaced the old MILC program where you didn't have to sign up. And this one is something that really had its origins by the leadership of a lot of farmers from Vermont and upstate New York. So the farmers have really advocated that we get this program in place. It's in place. But now each individual farmer, and they can be stubborn and take a hard, close look, each one has to decide whether to sign up, and we're really encouraging them to do that to get the benefit of the insurance protection.
So what seems to be the resistance? Just lethargy or not knowing about it or I don't have the money? What are the concerns?
Well, I don't know, but what I get a little bit worried about is that right now things are good on the farm. You know, the milk price is up, way up from where it was 4 or 5 years ago, and grain prices are down. So the farmers have actually been able to set some money aside, pay down debt, repair equipment, do things that are really good. But all the farmers know better than anyone that what goes up ends up coming down. And just a few years ago, we had the squeeze of low milk prices and high grain prices. But the one thing I am a little concerned about is that there may be some sense that times are good now and so you don't, quote, need insurance. But as we all know, if you own a home, you've got to have fire insurance for you hope you never use it. But you never know whether you'll need it. So I think the word is getting out there. Our co-ops are letting the farmers know. And there was always a view that they were going to make last-minute decisions so that they could base it on the information about the production of milk that was most closely related to when they were purchasing the insurance.
So what do they have to do? I mean, in other words, do they have to sign a paper? Or do they have to just let people know? I mean, how? Because
pretty simple. They can go into the local extension agent, and they can actually go through a bunch of different scenarios about their milk production, and decide and do scenarios where they could purchase one amount of insurance or another amount of insurance, see what it costs, and see what the benefit would be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty simple process, but you do have to make the decision and enact. But the basic protection is just $100 a month. That's catastrophic coverage that it really is money well spent.
Have you noticed that the Coca-Cola company is getting into the milk business?
I did not.
Yeah, they are. And that's pretty interesting because when I grew up, you had a choice, you know. You want a Coke or do you want milk? And only one kid took the milk. Everybody else took the Coke.
That's amazing. But, you know, dairy, of course, in Vermont and in New York State has really had a resurgence. And it is not just fluid milk, but cheese and of course, yogurt. And it's just been a tremendous benefit for those farmers to get back on their feet. And, of course, farming is so essential to the whole culture in Vermont. Most of us aren't farmers, but we all benefit by the hard work that the farmers do to keep the land open. And in case of Vermont,
you bet.
It's a special place.
You bet. I want to take a few minutes to ask you about the Keystone XL pipeline. To me, there's a big controversy about it. A lot of people don't want their land ruined. But what I don't understand is if it goes from Maine down to the southern United States, where it's going to get on ships and go to other places. What do we need it for?
Well, that's a good question. But the real issue, I think, because there's a lot of things to debate about, is should Congress, really for political reasons, there's a contested United States Senate race in Louisiana.
Indeed.
There's a Republican member of the House who's running against the Democratic incumbent senator from Louisiana. And both of those folks are trying to leverage this for the advantage of the campaign. Should Congress bypass what is the established procedure when you have an extensive construction project through environmentally sensitive areas, and basically say we'll waive any kind of environmental rule or review, will essentially eliminate the opportunity that local people have to raise questions about how this will affect their aquifer. So Congress is acting kind of like the planning board, where it's about political reasons as opposed to any fair and legitimate process. So I think this is really about politics when Congress was taking these votes to allow the Keystone Pipeline to proceed without having to go through the same process that any other construction process goes through.
Interesting. So if you had to be a predictor, what would you say?
Well, it failed in the Senate. You know, the House Republicans did pass the Keystone bill, and then in the Senate it failed by a few votes.
But the Senate is going to be Republican now.
It will continue, and then there'll be a decision made next year. Now, the Republicans are going to take it up again as soon as we return in January, because then they've got the higher numbers in the Senate. So at that point, I think it will pass the House and it will pass the Senate. And it'll be up to the president as to whether he vetoes it.
And the president hasn't been all that hot on this whole thing. He has not been particularly supportive, right?
Well, he's really been supportive of having a full and extensive review. I mean, there's complicated issues here in this sense. There's an environmental question. This tar sands oil, by all accounts, is about the dirtiest oil you can get. In the process to get that out of the ground, the impact on the terrain and the methods to get it out of the ground are energy intensive. There's no dispute that this tar sands oil is among the most polluting of oil. It's not like pure, sweet Texas crude. Second, it was said initially, but now people are acknowledging it's not true, it really won't have an impact on our domestic supply, because I think you mentioned it in the beginning, that it would go down to the pipeline, be refined in New Orleans area, and then shipped abroad. and then third, I think that even those of us who are opposed to the pipeline for environmental reasons have to acknowledge that these are construction jobs. So and construction jobs, by definition, are temporary, and they're good jobs. But the question of whether you should build it or not has to be, I think, based on a whole review of what the ultimate impact is and what the trade-offs are. I mean, I'd actually like to see our construction workers going to work, building roads, building bridges, repairing our airports, and get those folks to work as quick as we can. But that would be something we could accomplish collectively with a big broad-based infrastructure bill.
Congressman Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont, at large, the only one in Vermont in office since 2007. Thanks for taking this time, Peter. When we come back the next time, I want to ask you some political questions.
Sure.